Good afternoon, everyone. I think it's the first time I came in and said good afternoon instead of a good morning, but it's been that kind of day. The first, the 1322nd meeting of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Board of Directors will now come to order. First, my apologies for those of you who may have been waiting. We had a special committee meeting that took a little longer, but was very productive in the end. We're getting there. So we please accept our apologies for that. First order of business is approval of the agenda.
Move approval.
As the second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. We have the before us the minutes of the July 26, 2007 board meeting.
Move approval as presented.
Second. Any discussion?
One comment.
Oh, one comment? I'm sorry.
It's okay. Madam Chairman, I note that on page three of the minutes of the July meeting, it is noted that I had asked the general manager about a response to the RAC's recommendation regarding recycling, and the general manager had replied that it could be provided at the next meeting, which I think we are at. I'm not going to ask for that now, but I'm noting this ahead of time since the general manager has a report and he will want to address that. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any additional comment or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Snyder. We have the report of the Riders Advisory Council.
Good afternoon. I'll try to be brief since we're running way behind. In both my written report and my oral report that you have with you, you should see a discussion on rail car configuration, language assistance plan, the 30s Metro bus line study, and I'll go into some of the other ones. While at the Greenbelt station, I spoke with a station manager who asked about the benefits for expanding credit card program to parking at all stations. They have a significant number of visitors to this region, and so they'd like to know when that pilot program is going to be expanded to other stations. The communications and the emergency communications, Gerald Francis presented a detailed account of the 20-plus events that occurred at the rail in the rail system on August 26th and 27th. RAC members also participated in an emergency communications subcommittee meeting where we recommended more timely dissemination of information to customers and station managers, greater deployment of Metro employees throughout the system using existing staff, posting of station-specific emergency plans and services system-wide, and immediate implementation of service improvements through training and empowerment of frontline workers. In the matter of the 2009 budget, I'm very concerned that the RAC was excluded from receiving information to advise the board on this current round of fare policy discussions by direction of canceling the Metro budget briefing to the RAC. I have asked Mr. Harcum to meet with the RAC at our October meeting and discuss the current recommendations, and with your approval, I hope he'll be able to come. In our letter to Mr. Graham this morning, I included a number of questions. First of all, why is the Metro forecast for passenger revenue growing at only 1%? When 12% is what the average has been over the last 5 years, when we've seen a 5% growth in reported ridership over the last 6 months, when we've had 5 of the top 10 ridership days in Metro's history occurring in the last 6 months, when a record 19.2 million riders used Metro in July, does a forecast of 1% really represent only $5 million when actually there's a $6.5 million because we have $650 million, 1% of that should be $6.5 million. So I don't know where the $5 million figure comes from. And then in another place he mentioned that it would be $8 million. It would be nice if they could clarify that. But what I really think is that the ridership is probably growing at a more significant rate than 1%. there were other ways to balance this budget besides just making cuts in service or cuts in expenditures. You can also grow this system. Why can't Metro market public transit in the second worst transit region in the country? We should be seeing significant growth. We're moving from 6-car trains to 8-car trains. That's a 33% improvement in capacity. We should be able to fill those trains. So why are we rushing to a fare increase in mid-year or at all for 2008 without exploring all these other options? Finally, I'd like to quote from the letter that I sent to Mr. Graham for the budget meeting this morning. More money does not and will not cure all that ails Metro. As a board, you must identify measured business targets and goals on how Metro should be operated. You need to establish a policy on sustained ridership growth, increased off-peak ridership, improved customer service, expanded service offerings, and competitive transit value. The Washington, D.C. region was just ranked as having the second worst traffic in the country. In this region, at a time of environmental consciousness, a service-oriented public transit entity should be able to produce tangible results through efficient operations and effective marketing of transit options. In conclusion, as a board advisory committee, the RAC would appreciate timely opportunities to offer feedback on operating and budgetary initiatives so that we may achieve a higher level of rider satisfaction and public confidence in WMATA, as it states in our bylaws. I'd like to thank those Metro staff who include the RAC in pre-planning and ask, what would the Metro's customers on the RAC think of an idea? Thank you.
Question, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Snyder noted the recent reports, the latest study that shows we've moved from, I guess, clearly from number three to number two. We've kind of bounced around between number two and number three for worst congestion in the country. What should be borne in mind is those studies are basically for people who are literally in traffic. If you do studies that say commuting time for all people by all means, we improve significantly. And the reason, of course, is Metro. So, I mean, let's not forget that.
The roads onto the Metro.
And we are, in fact, doing that to a considerable degree in this city, not enough, but more in this metropolitan area than most other areas of the country. Mr. Snyder, you, in your report, refer to, on the budget section I'm looking at here, that it says the board went as far as to exclude the RAC by directing the cancellation of a budget briefing to the RAC. When did the board do that?
The last budget and finance meeting on the not this emergency one, the one last 2 weeks ago. The board, Mr. Harkin was supposed to come and brief the RAC on the current budget process, and Mr. Graham asked that he not go forward with that particular presentation.
Yes, I missed that, and I don't remember the board voting. If there was such a vote, Madam Chairman, I don't know that I was part of that.
I know what it was. I know, Madam
Chair.
That's
not exactly what happened.
Since my name has been mentioned, what happened there was I did not want the RAC to be briefed on a proposal, and that was the first proposal of the general manager, because it was clear to me at that point that that proposal had no support, and it would seem to me an exercise in just upsetting everybody over something that, you know, there was no reality attached to it. And it was in no way meant to be excluding the RAC from participation in this process. I just wanted to save you some time because the specifics of that proposal were kind of more or less DOA. And it's sure enough, it proved to be that. And so that was my only point. I hope you understand that.
Yes, Mr. Snyder.
The issue was we didn't get opportunity to even discuss that proposal, much less the proposal that was offered today, much less talk about the fair policy that you were going to be briefed on, because Mr. Harkham felt that he was given direction to not come and talk to the RAC about the budget issue.
Well, that is a mistake, and I'm very happy to take to heart what you've said, and that it was no way my intention was to exclude the RAC from this process. I just simply didn't want a lot of agitation over something that was not a realistic proposal. Do you understand that?
I'm sorry.
Okay. I understand it, but maybe it wasn't made clear to staff that that is what they intended.
Okay, hold on. Mr. Zimmerman wasn't finished, followed by...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you finished?
I guess.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman, followed by Ms. Hudgens, followed by Mr. Kaufman, unless you were done. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate Mr. Graham's helping to clarify that, and I trust, Mr. Snyder, that you'll explain what actually happened, what the board did and didn't direct, and perhaps you can get that corrected on the record in the future. There are two important points here. One is that I think the board very definitely wants to hear from the Writers Advisory Council, and it was a point we didn't get to that I had hoped to discuss earlier at the meeting earlier, but there most certainly needs to be input, as just as we will need to do public hearings before we do anything, from the Writers Advisory Council. I found disquieting, if I may use the term, the resolution that the RAC passed, the RAC on behalf of writers, and I appreciate that. Of course, you know, there are other folks who represent writers too, finds the proposal of mid-fiscal year fare increase disquieting. The RAC does not believe any such proposal should be considered without full public hearing, including consultation with the RAC. Now, it's not clear to me why you would be under the impression that any way that a proposal would be considered without a full public hearing, since, in fact, we by law have to go to public hearing, and what we're debating at this point is when to go to public hearing, whether there should actually be any consideration of a fair proposal. Is that, I mean, if the RAC really is being kept in the dark in that, then I have to worry about whether we're getting, you know, whether maybe we're not getting presentations to the Writers Advisory Council that they should have. I mean, how can they be laboring under the impression that somehow we were going to consider increasing fares without going to public hearing? Did they get no staff presentation, Mr. Cato, on budget
matters? You're looking at me, and I was wondering if that was a question. I am not aware of us ever telling the RAC we would not have a public hearing. You must have a public hearing for fare increase.
No, my concern is that you weren't telling them anything. But I'm just asking if that's the case. I don't know. But we, you know, on the one hand, we heard that, you know, they were told the staff couldn't present to them because we had directed them, which obviously was a mistake. But are they getting no, you know, no input about, because, I mean, it would be the most basic question. If there's a fare increase, what happens? Well, we'd have to go to public hearing. So, you know, when I see a resolution passed after presumably some deliberation, it suggests to me that they really haven't been given basic information about how the process works.
Well, I believe what's missing here, it just depends on how you define participation. Whether we've had a detailed briefing with the RAC on the specifics of every detail of the recommendations and asked for feedback on every detail, that did not occur. The broader discussion on fare increases, it's been a topic of discussion back and forth between all writers' groups as well as the board. And that has not been something that we have withheld. I have to agree, we didn't go into the specificities, and we will do that. But again, how you define participation might be debated.
Well, let me say, Madam Chairman, as one board member, my view is that we, as we go forward with this discussion of the budget and the fare issues, that we very much need the Writers Advisory Council to be working along with us, being educated as we are, and, you know, on the specifics here, working through those things, learning about it, and giving us feedback. I would hope that they would be getting the same kind of briefings that we've been getting and having the same discussions and struggling with us over the question of how do we make the numbers work in the end. And they need the opportunity to do that, and I really hope that we're sure that they get the staff support that's necessary for that, that they're encouraged to have that discussion. And at the same time, I would say, Mr. Snyder, also to understand that we do all have to make the numbers work here, and so we need constructive input as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I just want to add to the comment, though, that there also seems to be some assumption that they're getting less information than some of us are getting. And I want to make it clear that that is not necessarily true, and two, that it doesn't make sense to provide you with information, as Mr. Graham stated, when in fact the information is not going to even be considered. That would be a waste of your time as well. So I think there's kind of a process of what's needed information, when do you need it, and all those kind of things are things that have to be considered as well.
Ms. Hudgens, followed by Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you. Mrs. Snyder, thank you for your comment, because I think it probably goes to a larger concern. I think it's unfortunate that you may feel that you were left out of some critical information. I just wanted to ask staff a question. When was the last time we had a town hall meeting?
I'm trying to think of the date. It was a few months, a couple of months ago. I'm kind of lost for dates, be honest with you. But it's been with
Arch and Roslyn, we did one. Yeah. Was there one after that?
We had some later than that in the district.
The reason I raised it was raised to me, and the question I would ask is that are we utilizing the tool to our benefit in order to better disseminate information? And I think that really when you have something as drastic as major policy changes, it's an opportunity to unconstrain us from the public hearing process and be able to disseminate information that allows folks to more freely have a discussion. And I think we should probably think about that as we try and move forward through this process. I think the Writers Advisory Council is one aspect of it, but there is a larger public, and we did see more people engaged in that process.
Kaufman?
Just for clarification, Mr. Snyder, is October 3rd your next RAC meeting?
First Wednesday of the month, yes.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I would think without objection that we would request that the RAC be briefed on FAIR policy and the FAIR proposal, and so we can have the benefit of their opinion and their comments before our meeting on the 11th.
To the extent that it's known.
To the extent that it's known.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's
all right.
Could you restate that state?
Basically, that at their October 3rd meeting, the members of the RAC be given a briefing on the FAIR policy and the FAIR proposal as we discussed it today. Because they may not be, you know, this is one of those chicken egg discussions, and bring them up to date and whatever they have as far along as they are. Because the concern being, we are trying our best to presage what the public reaction will be as individual members here. Here's an opportunity to get it.
Okay.
Mr. Linton?
I was actually going to follow up with Mrs. Hutchins' remark and suggest that as we have some information and discussions about FAIR policy, that we might want to take that to a town hall meeting. But that's when you talk about all the variables, which we don't have right now. But that's where you would get a chance to really talk with the public about what all the issues are and challenges there are in funding this system long term, and what the FAIR policy considerations would be. But I wouldn't want to do that until we have it more fleshed out, so they have some variables and information that they can absorb. Going to them now without having that, you really don't give them the full magnitude of what the possibilities are.
Well, they're not mutually exclusive, really. You could go, and someone could go with Mr. Snyder, who's been paying attention as well, and say, just so that RAC gets a flavor of what we've been struggling with here, and that we don't have the answers yet, but we're working diligently to get the answers and figure out, and that would sort of, you know, we could talk about some of the issues that we've been grappling with, and then as we get some of these policies, go back. I mean, you can
one of our roles is to advise you all on how we think the riders will feel about a particular initiative. And this is a good opportunity for staff to be able to run things by us and see if something is necessarily a non-starter from a rider's perspective as opposed to the board's perspective. And that's all we're asking. We understand that the things have not been worked out, and we want to be a partner in helping you to be able to formulate the direction that Metro goes.
I think the sentiment here is that we're in agreement
yes.
With that.
That's good. That's
so, good.
Madam Chair?
Right.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Linton, followed by Mr. Cato.
I noted that the, you made reference to this 1%, 12%, 5%, and you were suggesting that the board, well, the staff's recommendation of revenue, passenger revenue growth was small compared to what it had been. I was wondering, Mr. Cato, have you and your staff looked at that and see whether or not there's some validity there, or?
Yes, we've looked at passenger revenue growth. You know, in 07, it was 1% over the prior year. If you go to the 2 years preceding that, it averaged about 12% or 6% per year. And then if you go back several years, many years, it's in the 2.5%, 3% range over time. So clearly growth has fallen off from what it was even 2 to 3 years ago.
I thought that was the case, but these numbers here don't seem to suggest that.
Yeah, we would have to look at these numbers. I'm not sure the source of these.
That's why I'm trying to get see if we can get some consistency of this, because the numbers on this statement from the RAC doesn't seem to be consistent with the numbers that I've seen in reports over the last, particularly the last year, where that growth had greatly reduced. Their numbers here don't seem to reflect that.
So and we'll look at that. The numbers I just said are the numbers from our report.
The differences here.
Yes, sir.
Are there any other questions or comments? Mr. Cato, did you have anything else to add?
No, we're fine. I understand.
Okay. Okay. Direction. Thank you very much, Ms. Snyder. Okay. Okay, we now have a public comment period. We have a number of people signed up. I'm going to remind everyone, thank them for coming today, remind everyone that we have a 2-minute time limit. So as I call you, and take that into consideration as you're coming up to the podium so that you'll know when your comments have to, when to wrap up your comments. Sarah Green? No? Go on.
Okay,
I'm coming. Okay, to be followed by Seth Grimes.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Green. I'm an advisory neighborhood commissioner for the 01 in the District of Columbia. And the community that elected me to that position is the community that lives all very close to your metro station. The metro station is within my single member district. And you've gotten this in the public hearing record, but this is way more than 1,000 signatures of your riders who are District of Columbia residents and the community surrounding the metro station, all telling you, please do not build the current proposal for roughly 85 townhomes at Tacoma Metro Station. Also, during their October 11, 2006 public hearing, between the spoken comments and the submitted comments, you had about over 90% of those comments, roughly 200 comments, saying no, no, no. There were very few, if any, yeses to this proposal. Why do you think that is? Well, it's because you're going to be selling about 2/3 of the land at one of the very smallest stations you have, and you're going to be doing it to build townhomes with private 2-car garages. And in order to build these townhomes, which are 150 feet from the fare cards, you're going to have a network of driveways and streets that are very, very land wasteful, all at one of the smallest stations, to get those cars into the private 2-car garages. And you've been ignoring an alternative development proposal that your staff refuses to look at, that the staff report for that public hearing does not acknowledge. So, what we've been hearing time and time again from your staff, from elected officials years ago, is this is a done deal. Don't come with any alternatives. Don't come opposing this. A public hearing doesn't matter.
Screen.
It's a done deal.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much. You have the ability to do the right thing here, and we're asking you to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Seth Grimes, followed by Robert Dietrich.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hewlett, board members, Mr. Cato, and staff. I'm Seth Grimes, 7300 Willow Avenue, Tacoma Park, Maryland. I'm president of the Old Town Residents Association and a member of an ad hoc group of Tacoma Park residents, both from the District of Columbia and Maryland, who seek to better our shared neighborhood. In that respect, we are like many communities throughout the Washington, D.C. area. We are similarly concerned with, you are similarly concerned with regional issues that cross jurisdictional boundaries. Joint development at the Tacoma Metro site is one such issue. We in the community appreciate the process that allows us to comment at meetings such as this one, to testify at compact hearings, and in particular to offer our reactions to a site design that affects the livability and especially the transit usability and accessibility of the Tacoma Metro site adversely affects it. We regret that we in the community have been an afterthought in the joint development process. That process has had many flaws and has culminated in a site design that negatively limits transit access and capacity. We urge very significant design changes that will transform developer EYA's plan, even as recently revised, into true transit-oriented development. To this end, we in the community have organized an outreach effort to encourage our neighbors to make comments in response to the staff report on the last October's compact hearing. And I think that you will find those comments are overwhelmingly opposed to EYA developer current plans. I appreciate that you will take into your consideration the comments that you receive, all of you, without regard to jurisdictional boundaries in the common interest that we all have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dietrich, followed by Richard Holsage.
Board members and staff, I have three quick points that I'll make on two interrelated themes, cost efficiency and operational efficiency. Competitive procurement of the hybrid electrical buses, which I understand are going to be discussed today, is very important for the both cost efficiency and the operational efficiency of a model. Particularly with hybrid buses, which are very important to our system. And I hope that this issue isn't being conflated with the separate procurement of the 22 articulated compressed natural gas buses, which I also saw in the little link below the item on the agenda. In these times of budgetary issues and proposed fare hikes, I hope the board will thoroughly consider whether riders will be best served and the cost efficiency of WMATA will be served in the award of these hybrid buses. I understand that there is a company with extensive experience having delivered nearly 400 buses to five different transit authorities nationwide that has submitted a proposal that delivers the most value at lowest cost to Metro riders and WMATA. And I understand that this company is called NABI. I don't know what decision the board plans to take today, but I urge the board to table any decision until it carefully considers and investigate why buses are not being purchased in the best interest of the riders and the efficiency of WMATA. My second point is a little different track, but it still focuses on efficiency. The train track between the airport and Braddock Road, blue and yellow lines, is running very slowly, and it hinders the commute both in the morning and at night. And then returning to both themes together, I know that the budgetary issues, and I know the proposed fare hikes that you all are considering, and I imagine that you take your slogan, Metro Open Doors, seriously. And I hope you ensure that the cost of walking through those doors is not prohibitive. We can do that by managing our resources and procurements to ensure cost effectiveness and operational
effectiveness. Your time is up.
Thank you, sir.
Question for the speaker, Madam Chair.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Dietrich, on your first point, the award of the contractor procurement for buses. You're suggesting that it was somehow what's recommended to us is not the basis, it's not been on the basis of a competitive bid, and it's not the lowest cost, and I was wondering what you were basing that on.
My understanding is that there was a competitive bid process. What I do understand is that it may not be the lowest bid, and I don't know what the considerations the staff took into account when deciding which recommendation to make to you all. Frankly, I don't think that is a matter of public record, at least at this point. So I'm kind of operating in the dark here, but I know, or at least I have reason to believe, that it may not be the option that was in the best interest of riders.
And granted, it's not necessarily on low bid, because, you know, we often use best value procurement in these situations, because, of course, the lowest price is not necessarily the best product.
It works too.
But what would lead you to question, in this case, whether the recommendation is in the best interest of riders?
Well, frankly, just what I said, that I understand that there's a provider that has offered you an option that has a lot of experience behind it. The company, which I understand is NABI, has a lot of experience.
Quite a few bus vendors, and they're one of them.
I'm sure. And they have a lot of experience in providing this type of service. And I don't know what the process was in the final decision making, because that's not public. But I am concerned that there is such a vendor out there that has a lot of experience, that has submitted a low cost bid. I don't know if it was the lowest or not, because that's not public information. But I don't know if it was considered, and I don't know if that decision making process is going to be made public.
Well, and when we get to that item, we can certainly ask those questions. I was trying to understand what basis there might be for you having such a suspicion. In any case, when there's a procurement, there are always bidders, and there's always people who lose the bid. And in my experience, those who lose the bid always say theirs was better, but, you know, in the end, you have to evaluate it based on price and other factors that are in a best value procurement are laid out beforehand. And so in any case, I mean, it's always a fair question to ask about any procurement, why this one and not another one. But usually there's a pretty straightforward answer to that. And I just wondered whether there was something about this one that would lead you to think something else was going on. You know, again, I know the names of the major bus manufacturers, and several of them might have been interested, and one of them is being recommended. Why should I, as a board member, be concerned that one of the ones that didn't get the bid would be better for us?
Well, other than what I've said, I can't point to anything specific in this case that might raise more suspicions than others. But as you said, it's always a fair question, procurements, you know, why this one and not the other one. And when you have a company that, at least, I mean, and you probably have access to far more information than I do about who submitted bids and who didn't. I don't have all that information.
Not necessarily, no.
Well, not necessarily, but maybe the staff does. I'm just aware that there's a company with an extensive amount of experience that, to my understanding, put in a low-cost bid, and I just don't know, was that cost-effective? Was that decision made in the best interest of the riders? And I think that warrants the board's consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Great.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you. Holsager. Okay. Richard Holsager, followed by Faith Wheeler.
My name is Richard Holsager. I live on Piney Branch Road in D.C., about three blocks from Tacoma Metro. Given where I live, it's no surprise that I want to talk about a topic spoken of by two of my predecessors, one of whom happens to be my wife, I should disclose. I want to talk about the response to the report on the compact hearing on the planned joint development of the Metro Station. I have my response to that hearing here that I plan to turn in, and as long as I'm here, I thought I would try to emphasize my main point, which is that I think the report is highly selective, it leads to a foregone conclusion, and it's basically not really a report, but testimony by an advocate of the particular development plan. As far as I can tell, having read through it, I think I saw the whole thing. It fails to even mention the fact, mentioned by my wife already, that the oral and the written testimony was overwhelmingly in opposition to this plan, both from D.C. and from other people. That opposition has been uniform throughout all the public hearings that have occurred throughout the process. And also, I think it greatly understates the amount of non-compliance of this plan with the Tacoma Central District Plan, which forms the basis of the official support for this plan by DC. So in fact, I think in terms of either public or official support, it really is misleading to think that DC supports this plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Ms. Wheeler? Followed by, I may not say this correctly, Chioki, is that right? Perry, thank you. Ms. Wheeler.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, the board members, staff, others. I'm Beth Wheeler, Advisory Neighborhood Commission, PER. Off-peak ridership. We in Tacoma want Metro to continue to be the best ride in the nation. We in Tacoma are an original cross-jurisdictional transit-oriented community. Since it was first established in the 1880s, that's the 19th century, around the B&O Metropolitan Branch tracks, which is exactly the same rail bed that the Red Line of WMATA uses today. In the 1960s, the Tacoma community, DC and Maryland, were instrumental in stopping the North Central Freeway, which was to bring some 12,000 cars into the city. We urged that the federal highway funds be transferred to establish a rail system, a rapid rail system, the Metro, the WMATA Metro. We are a great supporter of WMATA. We are an initiator in supporting and establishing WMATA, our Metro. In the 1970s, our Tacoma station opened to serve the community. It has taken hundreds of drivers off our streets. Now, in 2007, we're looking at an EY proposal.
Willa, your time is up. Amazon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Mr. Perry, if you have comments in writing, you can submit them. Followed by Norman.
Good afternoon. My name is T.O.K. Perry, and I'm visiting you here from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a member of the Atlanta Jobs for Justice Save Carter campaign. Our transit agency. I'm here pretty much alluding to the sign on the wall that the previous speaker addressed, because I had always held the Metro system out as a national example. I'm here visiting this week considering a return to the DC area. So on Tuesday, I got information that there may be a fare increase. I've done some transit justice work in Atlanta with Job and Justice, and we're a coalition in 40 cities and 12 states across America with over 5,000 members. National office here on 13th. Local office is on 16th. Concerned about this proposed fare increase. My efforts and work that I found that it's a severely transit-dependent community, not only here in Metro DC, across the nation. And this transit is the one where I live now. We have a burden across for transit, and that's all across America. That's unjust and unfair. We have a dismantled institution in terms of racism. Dr. Robert Bullock's book. democracy of all of these transit boards that include transportation employees.
Larry, your time is up.
Thank you. Ms. Norman, is a book?
Beaky. Beaky.
No?
Beaky.
Beaky? Is that what you're saying?
I see B-E-E-K.
I thought it was B-E-E-K. Okay, are there any of the speakers who have signed up today? Because I might not be pronouncing it correctly. No? Hearing none, I'll declare that portion of the agenda to be over the public comment period. Okay, we now have the report by the chair. I only have two things to address, really. One, on a more pleasant note, the 31st Annual Metro Bus Rodeo, R-O-A-D-E-O, took place on September 15th. And this event, as you may know, is a great way to encourage our bus operators and maintenance teams to take pride in their work. And we just wanted to congratulate two folks, well, actually a couple of folks here. First, Robert Miles of the Landover Bus Division in Prince George's County for winning the operator competition for the 19th time. Miles is a 37-year veteran with Metro Bus. He competed against 69 fellow bus drivers on an obstacle course that included every conceivable maneuver a bus operator would ever encounter on the street. So we congratulate Miles. In the maintenance competition, there is a team of Don Rich, David Swearman, and Kimpy Trin from the Technical Support Service Branch in Washington, D.C., who took first place. And this was just their second year of competition. So we wanted to congratulate all those winners and wish them the best of luck when they represent WMATA at the American Public Transportation Association International Bus Rodeo in May 2008 in Austin, Texas. So there, we want to congratulate you. Now, the second item, I have to take the chair's privilege in addressing something that we have been addressing, but I was fairly silent today, so, but not right now. I just want to make it clear that that we take the proposed fair increase very, very, very seriously. It's a comment that has been the topic of the day, and it's clear it'll be the topic of many, many days to come. But the things I wanted to point out were that we all feel very, very strongly about this issue. We may not come down the same way, but we all on this board feel very, very strongly about this issue, and we recognize it's one of our goals, that one of our primary goals, to provide quality, dependable, and affordable transportation. This board understands that Metro's operating costs are rising, that we are grappling with this as are many other transit operations and jurisdictions in all the jurisdictions throughout the country. Like everyone else, we recognize that it's a problem, and we are grappling with how do we fix this imminent budget dilemma, without placing the burden unfairly on the backs of our riders. We all care about our riders. We all recognize how the extent to which this could affect our customers, particularly those who ride the rail system, those who ride the bus system, and those who use our parking facilities, and particularly those who use all of the above. It can have enormous impact on them, and we care about all of those riders. We want to assure that the public that the board members and I do not take this decision lightly. We are acutely aware of our responsibility, and we recognize that ultimately, and I have faith that ultimately we will all do the right thing, even if that right thing is not the popular thing. We will all do the right thing, but not before analyzing all the information that comes to us from our staff, from our professionals there, not before analyzing all the information and the testimony that we hear at our public hearings, not before getting all the input that we can from the Riders Advisory Council, and not before getting all the board questions answered. We were going to take all that stuff, synthesize it, distill it, and try to make the best decision that we possibly can. after soliciting all the rest of the information via public hearing process. So I want to make it clear that right now we are still in that stage of analyzing information that comes to us, and we're just really at the beginning still. And we will have public hearings, and no decision has been made. And I really wanted to take the opportunity to thank Mr. Cato and staff. That, you know, we are all bombarding you with questions, not just at these special sessions. We had a special session finance committee meeting today. We are going to have a special board meeting. I mean, we are really, really engaged and interested here because we recognize how serious this is. So we wanted to thank you for your constant feedback and for all of your efforts. And the emails that are going back and forth. I mean, we all have questions for you. And I'd also like to thank the citizens who have emailed and called and those who've come here today to speak on this subject, because your input is invaluable as well. And I think the board has been truly engaged. And even though we have differences in how we come down, I think we're all concerned about our riders and making sure that our fair policy is just that. Fair, F-A-I-R. So I did want to mention that. And I think we are on, as Mayor Yule said, we are on the right track here, but we got to keep going. So thank you so much. And with that, we have the report of the General Manager, Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm going to make my report very short, given the lateness of the day. From a safety standpoint, I just want to notify you that we have moved into a new phase of our safety improvement program, and our contractor has completed work on the safety assessment and is now briefing the results to our employees, and we will keep this board informed of the results of that. In addition, we ended the last day of service for nationals at RFK, and we provided services for over 246 home games. And we were very successful in doing that and moving a lot of commuters. Today there was an article concerning the possible delay in the completion of the Navy Yard Station expansion or the new entry to the Metro Rail system. There's two pieces of construction going on at that location, one that's being handled by Metro staff and the internal configuration of the station, and the other that's being handled by the developer putting up a complex there. That is behind schedule. The developer's work schedule is delayed by, I think, approximately 7 weeks. We've been assured that, and our observation has been, they're putting in extra efforts in order to get that project completed on time. But I want to assure this board, as well as the nationals, that we are and have contingency plans to be able to provide those services at the beginning of the baseball season. The other issue is concerning our services that a gentleman brought up today about the slowness of trains between National and other stations, and Braddock Station. We have replaced the main transformer at the Pacific Yards electric substation. That was the transformer that was the major cause of our power problems on August 26, and we've also reconfigured the substation at National Airport to improve that efficiency. In addition, there was a question from the Writers Advisory Committee at the last meeting concerning recycle bin for newspapers, and we do have recycle containers that I believe were provided by the Washington Post that are at our stations, and we recycle the newspapers. There are a couple locations where we find that they become an overload because of the number of passengers, and so we're working to secure additional bins there, but we do recycle the newspapers. There, as I mentioned, we handle those very well. There's a couple of stations where it's slightly going over the capacity of the bins themselves. Yes.
Yes, Mr. Zimmerman.
Just, will that report be given directly to the Writers Advisory Council since they raised the question in the first place?
Yes, we will give a report and a response back to them, and I believe you said you have a meeting on October 3rd. We'll make that presentation to them
October
3rd. Also, before I get into recognizing one of our employees, I do have to let the board know there are pending protests on two items before you today for approval. There are two protests on the bus award, one from Design Line International and North American Bus Industries, or NABI, N-A-B-I, to the award of a bus contract to New Flyer. Should you authorize the award of the two New Flyer, our procurement regulations require a delay of the actual award for 5 days following the contracting officer's review and also decisions on the protest, and we will follow our normal procedures should you approve that award. The second protest is by MR Ballpark 7 LLC concerning the sale of the Southeastern Bus Garage. The procurement regulations do not apply to the sale of our property. However, should the board approve the sale today, the award would be made as soon as possible following the review of the protest. If there are any questions on that?
If you want to answer your question.
If you'd like to have a question.
Are we interrupting? Are we doing this now? Are we waiting to the end of the report?
I have some more, but it's a separate issue. I'll be bringing up if you have a question. I try my best to answer it.
I'm struck by something he's just said. I mean, and since you already asked the question.
Which question?
I don't know, whatever you asked. But anyway, I'm surprised. Maybe not surprised. I'm struck. That's what I wanted to say. You said that in the case of the Southeastern Bus Garage, that even though there was no delay required by our procurement regulations, you would delay the decision until what did you say about that?
I said should the board award the garage to the successful bidder, that we would go through the normal review process to ensure that we followed all the procedures, and our procedures for procurement is a 5-day delay of the release of the property itself. It would delay it 5 days just for the review process.
But I thought I heard you say that didn't apply to dispositions.
Just as a clarification, the disposition of surplus property is not governed by the procurement regulations. Both FTA regs and our procurement regulations require a delay of 5 days of an award after a protest has been resolved. That does not apply to the sale of the Southeastern Bus Garage, but we would, of course, respond to the protest and then move forward with the award, should the board approve it today, as quickly as possible after the protest has been answered. Protest was just received late yesterday.
I think, the question, Madam Chair, that I was going to ask at the conclusion of your remarks, but I'll ask now, does pertain to these delays, because, I appreciate the comment that you've made on the delays at the Navy Yard, but I think we need something more specific to assure us that if the improvements at the Navy Yard station are not to be completed by opening game day. We need a plan B in place for how to handle that opening day crowd. And so I would like to ask, if I may, for more detailed consideration of what our options are there, because we may end up with delays there. And I'm also concerned about whatever decision this board makes on the disposition of the Southeastern Bus Garage, that we move as expeditiously as possible, because again, that particular property has great relevance to the opening day as well of the baseball season, because the owners of the team and the District of Columbia are anticipating that there would be 350 parking spaces in that garage. And we're also very concerned about pedestrian safety, which is one of the reasons that we're moving the garage. So that all of these buses moving at the same time as people arriving for a baseball game is obviously not a situation that we want to have happen. And so in both cases, I want to be assured, and I was a little bit taken aback by your comment that, it seemed as though there's going to be an extended process. I mean, we should follow our procedures precisely And if they involve a delay, we should have the delay. If they don't involve the delay, we ought not to have it. You understand what I'm saying?
There's
a little bit
That's
of a mixed message here.
That's very clear.
I mean, whatever our policies are, I definitely want to abide by them, but I don't want to create a new consideration that involves further delays relating to this property, because we just can't afford it. Are we on the same page?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. At each board meeting, we'd like to recognize the outstanding work our employees do each and every day. Today, I would like to talk about Cynthia Champion, one of our red line station managers, and she's here this morning. Better yet, I'm going to let you hear about what happened in the words of one of our customers, and I will be paraphrasing what the letter we received from the customer who was visiting from Ohio 2 months ago. On July 19th, my 10-year-old daughter and I were separated after we departed from DuPont Circle. We arrived at Farragut North, and I stepped off the train, assuming my daughter was right behind me. She was not. I turned and saw the train take off. All the while, my daughter's face was glued to the window as we watched each other vanish, seemingly forever. Can you imagine the panic and horror in our minds? I had no idea what to do at this point. I ran to the upstairs platform where I approached a woman, a Metro employee, and explained what has happened. She quickly gathered the facts and called in the troops and managed to stay on top of every aspect of what was transpiring on the red line. She stayed near me and assumed that my daughter would be found no matter what. She was right. She has already orchestrated many other security teams at various points on the red line, particularly Metro Center. I was impressed that she also had contingency plans in the event that her daughter or she was not found there. My daughter was found at Metro Center by your security team, where she was held until I was able to get to her. I cried twice in the last 20 years, and this is one of those occasions whereby I let loose with tears of joy when this woman conveyed to me that my daughter was found at Metro Center. It is people like this Metro employee who makes the world a safer place. Her attention to detail and her attention to others' concern should be rewarded with the highest praise. I thank the entire Metro subway system for their organization and professionalism during such stressful moments. To close quote, the actions of station manager Cynthia Champion are a reminder of just how seriously our employees take their responsibilities. I am grateful and proud of Ms. Champion for the example that she has set for all of us. And now I would like to present to Ms. Champion just a certificate acknowledging her excellent work and ask that the board also thank her for the outstanding performance that she demonstrated on July 19th.
Champion, on behalf of the board, we thank you so very much for your responsiveness, for being so very quick on your feet and helping that and deflecting what could have been a really tragic circumstance. So thank you so very much on behalf of everyone. Okay, we have item number 8 on the report of Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. Mr. Benjamin.
Staff is requesting approval to award a one-year base and four one-year options for the purchase of 474 buses over a period of 5 years. This was brought to us in committee, and we requested a detailing of what buses would be bought and the funding associated with them. The information that we have received shows that 125 buses would be part of the base buy and 100 buses in FY09 as the first option. There are no funds available for the remaining 249 buses in this order, so I'm therefore moving that we approve this request for an award of these buses for the base year and the one-year option and the remaining options based on availability of funds. Are there additional follow-ups that we need a second, and also we
need
to follow up.
We need a second.
I'll second the motion.
A second. Any discussion?
Need follow up on the issue brought up earlier.
Okay. Mr. Monome, I thought you had something.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay. Mr. Cato, can you address the question about, well, first just tell me generally how this procurement recommendation was made. How did you come to the award that you're asking us to approve?
We went out for requests for best value proposals for various firms to provide buses, and the various bids came in. We reviewed those by a committee, which I was not a part of, and I purposely stayed out of that process. And the committee and their best judgment based upon the technical requirements of the specifications and as well as what was submitted, recommended that we procure 22 articulated buses from NAVI, and that the additional vehicles be obtained from New Flyer. And we have staff here who could go into the actual details of that procurement process if necessary.
What I want to know is, and as you said, you didn't yourself participate directly, but you've reviewed it.
Yes, I did.
So first, are you satisfied that the process conformed to our own regulations and those of the Federal Transit Administration?
I am completely satisfied that the process conformed to our Metro requirements as well as those requirements of the Federal Transit Administration.
And the protest that you referred to earlier, is that concerning the entire procurement or one aspect, one component of it?
I have not had the chance to look at the details of the protest. The protest, though, I believe is from one provider is the entire award, and from the other provider is a portion of the award, because one of the protesters, we are procuring buses from it. It's the second piece that they're protesting, every vehicle, the non-articulated vehicles.
They got one award, they didn't get the other, they're objecting to the part they didn't get.
Right.
And just briefly, what is the basis for the protest?
I have not had a chance to read the protest. I don't know if you...
Well, essentially, they're saying they provided the lowest price, and it should have been awarded on that basis.
Okay, and procurement was on the basis of best value.
Yes.
Because it's not like buying number two pencils. There are actually different characteristics of the product we're purchasing. Yes?
Yes.
And how significant a price difference are we talking about?
I'm going to ask the staff to respond to that.
I'd have to defer to Mr. Griswold on that one. Well, from what I know, initially the pricing came in, there was a $2 million discrepancy between one of the protesters and the one that staff recommended. Subsequent to that, the way the buses were scheduled to be delivered, the pricing was adjusted, and they're virtually the same. That has to do with the tie-in of the FY08-09 procurements being awarded concurrently.
Okay, I'm not sure I follow that. All I wanted to know was, are these guys saying their price is 5% lower, 10% lower, 50% lower?
It wasn't different. They didn't give you any. They didn't give us a percentage differential between the two proposals. Because I'm not sure that they're aware of the one that was, you know, one is aware of what the other has submitted at this point in time.
But you are. So yeah. Since you know what they were saying that they would sell us X number of buses
Correct.
For, and you divide it by, you know how much it is per bus.
Yes.
So you can say, these guys' bus, their bus costs 5% more than these,
Well, initially, there was a differential of about that amount of 5%. But like I'm saying, like I was saying, subsequent to that, when the award was, the proposal was addressed and the final pricing was provided based on the award information, they both were within, I think it was 0.09%. They ended up.
But one went up or the other went down?
One went down.
One the up, one you're awarding down. Appeared
yes,
to be
down.
Lower. Now, how could that down. Be if it's a bid?
Well, what happened, the delivery dates of the buses remained the same. Starting in the fall of the beginning of fiscal year 08 and being completed in fiscal year 09. But if you made the award concurrently, economies of scale, even though the expenditure didn't change, the fact is if they were awarded up front, the price went down instead of.
You know, it sounds like as if there was a negotiation subsequent to the award being determined to change the terms of the offer. Is that what I'm hearing?
There was no negotiation.
Well, how does the bid change after? I mean, if you have a sealed bid process,
yeah, then it was a request for proposals. So under an RFP, you can have a type of negotiation. It's not a direct negotiation, but there can be discussions, and the proposers can be given the opportunity to provide a best and final offer after those discussions. All proposers, of course, are given that option.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. So under the process, the initial bid is not the best and final offer, and there's give and take with the various proposers, and if in the course of that discussion they modify it, the cost number can change.
Yes.
Do secondary, I mean, again, suppose you have that back and forth with one bidder of, say, three. I don't know what there were, but imagine there were three. And, you know, you have that back and forth, and one bidder's numbers get better then. Is there any way, do you then go and try to determine from the other bidders whether theirs would change?
I can't speak to this specific process, but generally, in a request for a proposal, if there are true discussions that lead to, for example, one proposer improving their bid, then all proposers are allowed to do so. So you don't just pick out one person or one proposer and treat them differently. But I'm not familiar with the procedures. I haven't had a chance to review the protests yet, but I'm talking generally the difference between a request for proposal and an invitation for bids.
For questions. First, Mr. Cato, are you confident that anyone who wanted to had the same opportunity as the firm that you're recommending be awarded the contract?
Had the same opportunity if they met the specifications outlined in the original request, yes.
Specify what it is you want to see in the product they're going to sell you, and they have to be responsive to that.
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
Specify
yes.
What it is you want to buy, and bidders have to be responsive to that.
If they're not responsive to that, and they have to have a product that meets our needs, and the product has to have been certified for use in the United States.
In this case, the award, the difference seems not to have been really around price anyway, ultimately.
Right.
So there's a difference between what the one you're recommending and the ones you're not recommending in terms of what kind of characteristics. Are you saying the others were non-responsive? Are you saying that this one is superior in some specific features? Or
there are different degrees of detail, and I know some of it, but let me go into detail. For example, one of the providers have not had their vehicle that they proposed tested in Pennsylvania as required by FDA to a testing site. And there is no vehicles in operation in the United States, and there's some questions about the percentage of the Buy America regulations, whether they met that. That's one example. The example on the second one I'm going to
they had no real experience in the hybrid electric propulsion portion of their vehicle as they proposed. They did have the background and technical expertise in the BRT portion, but they, to date, had only built one bus. That was their test bus. And there were also some concerns about some structural issues that had occurred. We met with them and discussed them. They did have some resolutions in place, but we didn't feel comfortable that enough mileage had accrued since the repairs had been made that the bus would perform well in our duty cycle.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I think this illustrates in part the reason why procurement becomes complex as you're buying a complex product, and the fact that, you know, you can't do something as simple as low bid because the nature of what you buy is different from different providers. And I've seen this in the past where you'll have a bid process and somebody will object, and what they're objecting to is that they essentially want to sell you something different than you said you wanted to buy, and they say, well, you really shouldn't be asking me for that. You should be asking me for this, which isn't what I sell. I don't know if that's the case here, but I know that's often at the heart of a lot of dissatisfaction by unsuccessful bidders. I'm satisfied that, you know, the process here is followed as it is in every such bid, and at some point we have to trust the experts who do this for us to evaluate the criteria that's most important. And I'm happy to support the recommendation with the understanding that, as we heard, the usual process will also apply afterwards, and the general manager and staff will have to review the award once more and determine that, in fact, all the requirements are satisfied, and then it would go forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, so we have a right now we have a motion and a second. Is all in favor of the report?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, Mr. Graham, we have the report of the Finance Administration.
Oh, no, you're not done with
okay. Okay. Oh, I'm B. I'm sorry, B. Mr. Benjamin?
There's a staff request for the board to authorize a public hearing to discontinue service on Route 7 and C7 and C9 from Greenbelt to Glenmont, and to reinvest those funds within Montgomery and Prince George's County. This was before the board once before was postponed. I believe Prince George's and Montgomery County have determined how they wish to move forward and would like us to reconsider this at this time. So I move authorization to conduct a public hearing.
If the motion, is there a second?
Second.
I'll second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Now, Mr. Graham, report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The following actions, well, I should say that the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee met on September the 13th. The following actions were referred to the board by the committee. First, use of the operating reserve and refund of jurisdictional balances on account. Staff requested approval to use the authorized contingency reserve totaling $10.4 million to fund a portion of the FY07 operating budget deficit, expected to be $19.9 million. Committee members from all three jurisdictions requested the jurisdictional balances totaling $8.3 million be held on account. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it.
Staff also requested approval to award a contract for consulting services to develop a comprehensive plan to reduce energy consumption in metro facilities. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it.
Staff also requested approval of procurement streamlining initiatives to improve business functions and implement best procurement practices. The Inspector General has no issues with this proposed procedures, but I do, and I voted no. This is the purchase card, but I was in the distinct minority since there was no one else voting no, and I will vote no again today, but I will move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
One no.
Please record.
Any abstention? Okay. Mr. Graham has.
And I just want to say it's a result of the purchase card experience that we had in the District of Columbia, which I know everyone doesn't share.
Okay.
I'm not going to say we've talked a lot about fares. Staff did request approval to amend the capital budget by $68 million, and we bring that back to our October 11th meeting. And there was also discussion of the issuance of Metro debt. But that will also be reappearing at our October the 11th meeting. And we've had updates on the monthly operating financial report and the quarterly CIP financial report, all of which is available to members of the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Graham? Okay. So For the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee, we have no report? That's okay.
The Planning, Development, Real Estate Committee met on September 13th, discussed what is one part of really a two-part action item. The discussion at that time, all around the southeastern bus garage, the discussion concerned essentially what to do in the interim and reassigning buses. There is this, the related question of the sale of the property itself, which wasn't the subject of that meeting, but is the subject of the action item before you today. The result of the discussion on September 13th was that the matter was moved forward to the board without recommendation. Since that time, more work has been done. The manager has a revised recommendation that relates both to the assignment of the buses and the sale of the garage property, and I'd like to turn to Mr. Cato to summarize his revised recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. We're asking the board to approve the sale of the southeastern bus garage property to the John Ackridge Development Company, and that the allocation of the proceeds from the sale of the garage be applied to the capital cost of the replacement garage, leaseback rentals, and any additional deadhead costs and other interim costs contingent upon, one, the acquisition of the replacement bus garage property at DC Village from the District of Columbia, and two, board approval of the southeastern bus garage replacement project and amendment of the mass transit plan in accordance with the Ramada Compact. So basically, in summary, we're asking that we approve the sale of the garage to John Ackridge Development Company for $69,250,000, and that $9,250,000 be set aside to be allocated for the cost of the temporary lease back, as well as any additional, the additional deadhead and other interim costs for that facility.
Recommendations are summed up, basically I should say that you've just summed up, are contained specifically in the proposed resolution that is attached to the report here before us.
Yes, that's true.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions of Mr. Zimmerman?
I have.
Okay, Mr. Graham.
I have two questions, and then I'm prepared to move approval of this. First, pardon?
There's more questions too, but go ahead.
You can move it.
I can move it, and then
yeah,
you can.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. First, is Mr. Cato, is it the position of the staff that it is both fully appropriate and legal that we award the disposition of this particular property to the applicant, I mean to the bidder in this case?
Yes.
This matter has been the subject of some controversy in the District of Columbia, and part of that controversy has related to the fact that one of the bidders had what is known as an escalator clause in the bid that they introduced for consideration by the authority. Does our general counsel have legal advice on the efficacy of an escalator clause in this particular form of bidding? Is it effective? Is it efficacious or not?
Well, let me say that the procedure that was used for the sale of the southeastern bus garage site was not a request for proposal, as was just discussed concerning the bus award. It was a request for sealed bids that asked for price for purchase of the site and a leaseback amount. One of the proposers came forward with an alternative bid. And the alternative bid was structured that if there were a bid higher, and this bid, by the way, was the lowest bid of the three that were received, if there were a higher bid, and our procedures allowed it, then that particular proposer's bid would be increased to $250,000 above the higher bid. It did not, I might point out, in the bid say above the highest bid. So even in the alternative bid, there was a bit of a discrepancy. However, our procedures in this type of solicitation do not allow for alternative bids. And I think if you look at these types of transactions is always requiring fairness to all proposers, you can immediately see why there would be a problem in giving one proposer, one bidder, two bites at the apple while the others have only one. It wasn't, this particular solicitation, again, was not structured to embrace either negotiations, best and final offers, or nor was it structured as an auction. In order to give effect to the alternative proposer or alternative bid, the authority would have had to given the other bidders the same opportunity. And that would escalate this or change or convert this process midstream into an auction, and it was a process that was not structured as an auction. There were other considerations to take into account that didn't lend this process, this sale, to an auction type arrangement. That was why the alternative proposal, or the alternative bid, I should say, could not be considered, and would not have been fair or appropriate to do so in the context of this type of sale. So yes, the alternative bid was not considered. I might also point out that bidder, which was MR Ballpark LLC, stated that if our procedures did not allow alternative bids, then their original bid of $60 million was to be reinstated, and that was what we did. That's the process that was followed.
So just for the sake of absolute clarity, it is your considered legal opinion that the attempt to have an escalator clause, an escalator bid in this particular competition was not valid?
Yes, that is my opinion.
And Madam Chair, I move approval.
Second.
It's been properly motioned and seconded, Mr. Maname, and followed by Mr. Benjamin.
More of a comment than a question. I think that the questions posed by Mr. Graham are fair questions, and I think it'd probably be in the best interest for this board to have some sort of a policy to deal with this, because just like the real estate market, this is quite common. We're all aware that people do put in escalation clauses as it relates to property. And in light of the discussion we just had in the next room about budget constraints, it'd be unfortunate in the future if we left money on the table. And that's a little bit of the feeling that I have about this deal, that we may have potentially left some money on the table as it would benefit the authority. So I would suggest that I know this is a very complex issue and it's not as straightforward as it may seem, but it may be worthwhile to at least consider something to address a similar situation. And then my final point is, as we do other transactions like this near Metro Rail facilities or anything even close to a Metro Rail facility, I think it'd be wise to consider a joint development. I think there's an opportunity here for the authority and the jurisdictions associated with that Metro Rail station to have some input into what happens there, a greater input into what happens there versus just the sale of property. You would hope that the wishes and dreams of any jurisdictions is considered when you dispose of property near a valuable piece of real estate. Comments for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin.
I'd just like to focus on the very last comment that Mr. Cato made and just make sure that I understand that the provision in here is that we will not go to settlement until such time as we've approved the replacement project and have funding in place for that. Is that correct?
I will read the resolution, and that's my understanding of the intent of the resolution. Is that truly?
Yes.
Are there any other questions? Okay.
I just want to say,
Mr. Graham.
And this harkens back to my earlier comments. I would hope that we would move as, and I know Mr. Maname is very much involved in this, but I would hope that we move with as rapidly as possible regarding the DC Village arrangement and any other matter that is contained in the envisioned by the last paragraph of the resolution. Again, it is of the utmost urgency that this building be ready for parking and for avoiding pedestrian hazards, you know, by the opening day of the new baseball season. And so I would ask you, Mr. Cato, to move with as much rapidity as you can muster on this.
I can muster it, sir.
Are there any other questions?
All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it.
Move the report, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. We have 17 administrative action items here.
Madam Chairman?
Yes?
I would move approval on block of administrative actions numbered 1 through 17 minus item 9.
Okay.
So that's items 1 through 8 and 10 through 17.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Item 9.
Item 9.
Okay, item 9 is approval to initiate and award a contract for parking meters.
So,
Mr. Maname?
Just had a quick question, a little bit about what type of meters are we talking about procuring here? We're talking about replacing essentially what proportion of our entire population of meters?
All right, we have approximately 3,800 parking meters in the system, and we're asking for a replacement of up to 3,500 of those that will provide acceptance of the dollar coin, a larger vault, allow them to be programmable for fare changes.
So for the most part, replacement in kind, some modifications to accept new fare money, new meters.
Yes.
I think it might be it might be beneficial for us to consider something that might be more friendly for credit card use, mm-hmm. or in addition, some sort of multi-space meters. Cheaper, you can use solar power, you can use credit cards, you can use your cell phone. It would seem like it'd be very customer friendly and customer focused.
We certainly can consider that prior to going out for the initiation of the contract.
I think that's a good recommendation, similar to the ones that are on certain segments of K Street I've seen in the district and also in Virginia. We will, if the board approves, I take that as a modification to this, and we will include that to seek other types of meters that are will accept credit cards and could handle multiple space.
Mr. Benjamin?
I suggest that as you do that, proximity cards are being used for many of these meters, and we have one. Our smart card is a proximity card. We might want to have these work with proximity cards.
Very good.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Is it not assumed that whatever meters we procure would be smart trip compatible?
I the details of the bid, I have to ask Jack that question.
Zimmerman, I'm not sure. I'll have to go back to staff. I don't believe they were.
It's assumed now, sir.
I mean, you know, there may be reasons you can't do it, but I just would assume that in anything we're looking at doing that we'd be saying, yeah, can we use our car, our own card that we've...
We'll take a look at all of those prior to, you know, any action.
I almost took that for granted. Thank you.
Would require at this point a tri-reader.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we incorporate those amendments to the
motion. They will be incorporated into this request.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay. Do we have any jurisdictional reports for the District of Columbia?
None.
For Maryland?
Nope.
Nope. From Virginia?
Nope.
Hearing none. I move that the board recess and convene in executive session, discuss personnel issues and board matters consistent with board procedure, Roman numeral 6.3.
Sorry.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Yellow dragon.